Welcome, everyone. If you have interest in hearing how you get into multifamily while you still have a W-2 job, you are going to want to hear what Mike Van has to say. Mike has been in the medical device field for over 20 years. He educated himself and took action by starting with a duplex, then single-family flips, then bought a 16-unit deal, then traded up to a 55-unit deal, and now is syndicating large multifamily communities, and all while still excelling at his day job. On to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing. Be introduced to the players that are getting it done and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on Mike Van before we start the show. Mike lives in Springfield, Missouri. He works in the medical device field by day and focuses on real estate at night and during his spare time. This guy should be relatable to many of you out there. He works a W-2 job and knew that he needed to do something more on the side. He sacrificed his nights and spare time to educate himself, and then he went out and took action. He built a $6 million real estate portfolio on his own, and then he started to syndicate large-scale multifamily with two business partners. This guy is not just focused on making money, but he wants to positively impact others. And he wants to create a legacy for his children. He's a Midwest guy with a heart for serving. Now, onto the show. Hey, everyone. We've got Mike Van here with us. Mike, appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me, Darren. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So Mike and I know each other from a mutual multifamily mentorship group. This guy is salt of the earth. He's a Midwest guy. He passes the beer test from my standpoint. We just get along really well and just a good guy. And one of the things I really like about bringing him on today is I've had a lot of guests that have been on the show that have, you know, have done tremendous things, own, you know, over 1,000 units. But a lot of them are full-time real estate professionals. And today we're going to be talking with somebody that, you know, still has a W-2 job and has found a way to get into real estate and to up his game while still having a day job. So Mike, appreciate you coming on.
Hey, my pleasure. Glad to be here.
So with that, can you help us understand, you know, what is your day-to-day job? You know, what's your day-to-day responsibilities and how'd you get involved in real estate?
So I've been in the medical sales business for about 20 years now, the past 16 years with the same company in the medical device industry. And, you know, we're in the OR 3 to 5 days a week, depending on the surgery schedule. And a lot of that's not under my control as far as when we're in the OR. I'm at the mercy of the surgeons and all that. It's a great job. You help a lot of people.
And you've said you've been there for 16 years, I think you told me at one point. So how did you get involved with real estate?
So the first few years I was in medical sales, I was with a pharmaceutical company, and they're kind of, I guess, known a lot of times for going through periods of downsizing. And so after a couple of times of sitting by the phone and waiting for that phone call to see if I had a job, and I was lucky enough to maintain, you know, my job through those calls. But after the first one or two of those, I thought,
of course, yeah. You were. Why would they? Of course they're going to keep the top guys, right?
Right. Of course. That's what I like to tell myself anyway. You're just a number at the end of the day. But anyway, so after making it through, realized that I needed to have a backup plan. And, you know, you see the late night infomercials with the the palm trees and the fancy cars and big houses and, you know, Carlton sheets on there telling you how easy it is to do. And you don't even have to have any of your own money. So I thought, well, hey, I can do that. And so I ordered his course and, you know, it sat on the shelf for a while till that next phone call came. And then, you know, luckily enough, I made it through that. And but then dusted it off and went out driving for dollars and found myself a duplex. And that was kind of the beginning. My first property was a duplex. And then kind of did a few different things from there, you know, whether it's fix and flips, lease options, and then started buying some multifamily stuff.
That's awesome. So, you know, one of the things you talk about is, you know, when you brought up layoffs, man, and we're in the middle of COVID right now, and there's been a lot of people that have been impacted by that. And I've been in a number of different corporate positions and in sales and in financial accounting and different roles. And, you know, I've also seen people that have been impacted by some of those layoffs during different, you know, economic down cycles. And, you know, I think it's a little bit of a misnomer that a lot of people think that a W-2 job is completely secure. But at the end of the day, you're always at the whim of, you know, your superiors, and they could leave the company, you know, either be laid off or decide to leave for a better opportunity. And then, you know, all of a sudden somebody comes in that's new and they want to bring in their own new people, and you could be out even though you're doing a fantastic job just because there's new people that came in above you. So,
yeah, that happened to me at a previous job, actually.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah, the regional came in. Everybody in the company knew I was set up for the promotion, and new regional vice president came in and brought his own group in for the area manager position that opened up. That's what caused me to leave the job and go into medical sales. So
yeah, I mean, look, I mean, you there's a piece of me that can't fault the person that comes in because they've probably developed a team that they trust, and they may have done it at two or three other companies, right? And they just take that same team and go redo what they did. So
the known versus the unknown.
Yeah, right, it's the known versus the unknown. So
he was de-risking his option. So
exactly. So one of the things I heard you say though was, you know, you wanted to, you know, create another way of making some income. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the reasons why you went after real estate. Right. And you started with a duplex, and, you know, a lot of people, that's the way they get started. They buy either a single family or they buy a duplex. And, you know, that's a common theme. And some people stay there, right? And they just stay owning a few duplexes or owning some single family, but you decided to go bigger. So I recall you ended up buying some property that was a little bit larger, but you did that before syndication. You know, help me understand.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, as I went, you know, from that duplex and then bought a few, you know, single family homes, and mostly was into flipping because I had a background in construction. My family had a construction company, and so I kind of cut my teeth, you know, doing that kind of work. And so the flipping stuff was natural to me. So I, when I moved to Springfield back in 2005, got to know the market a little bit and started doing some flips and, flipped a few houses. And, you know, then the 2008 hit, and because I was not as educated as I should have been, I stopped because my thought process was if no one can get credit to buy my flips, then I need to stop flipping. In all actuality, that was the prime time to start buying for buy and holds. But yet I didn't know that. But after I stopped and had time to start educating myself, you know, around 2009 or so, into 2009, started putting feelers back out there, realized I needed to get back in the game. So put feelers out, talked to my contacts in the banking industry and the real estate brokers that I'd met with in the past, and put the word out that I was looking and you know, wanted to buy some properties. And a friend of mine was a president of a bank, and he actually had a broker come by and talk to him about a bank owned property from another bank, not his. And, so he's like, I know a guy. So he called me, I called the broker and ended up buying a 16 unit bank owned property and got a phenomenal deal.
That is awesome. You know, one thing you said there was you told people that you were looking. You know, that's something that's so important. If you want to get involved in anything, if you're starting your own business, or if you're getting into real estate, if you're making a career change, you need to tell as many people as you can. Shout from the rooftops, because if people don't know you and don't know what you're doing, they can't help you. You know, there's some people that are out there that just legitimately want to help you. There are other people that will be judging you and will be looking at you. And there's probably some people that are looking, they're jealous and they want you to fail.
Right. But
there are legitimate people that would like to help you if they know. So right. What you did was you told a lot of people, and then that bank president knew you were looking. He told you, and then you took action and actually made the call, and it led to a great 16 unit deal. And right. And from my recollection, you did pretty well on that deal.
Yes. So it was a 5-year-old property, townhouse style. It had just been built by the builder, and he managed it and did that poorly. He was a great builder, but not a great manager. And so the bank had taken that back. So I bought it and cured some deferred maintenance on the property and rented it, got it filled up, and then, you know, raised rents over the years, and then exited that property. I'm a buy and hold investor, you know, personally. And but when the opportunity came to sell it to the guy who had bought the properties on either side of me, I named my price $785, and he bought it. So I was like, oh no, now I actually have to sell it.
So yeah. You had a decent profit on that deal, and then you decided to do
1031. Yeah, I did a 1031 into a 55 unit apartment complex down in Arkansas, which is about 3 hours away. But it was in my hometown where I grew up, down in Fort Smith. Knew the area, is a great area, right across from highly rated junior high school and next door to a highly rated elementary school. Actually found that property through a Facebook group that I was part of. And so I bought it directly from the owners, and that was an interesting story. But yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. I bought that property just before you and I met, a couple months before you and I met, through that mentoring program. And you know, like I told you before, I learned a few things that I wish I had done differently, or had known prior to buying that 55 mm-hmm. unit. But was able to take those lessons that I learned quickly, implement them, and make the changes I needed.
So what were some of those lessons?
First was financing. You know, I had done everything and through a community bank, commercial lender there that I was friends with and developed a great relationship with. He, you know, says he'll finance me pretty much anywhere I want to go. And so it was a recourse loan. Right. You know, and it's also limited. I did get 80%, you know, financing leverage. On 80% leverage, and even financed some construction cost for me as well into there, in addition to the 80%. But it's a recourse loan, you know, and it's only a 20-year amortization, so my payment's a little bit higher. Oh,
yeah, that makes a big difference.
But it was such a good deal that even at that, I still make pretty good cash flow on it. But something else I learned that was probably even more important was the fact that in the asset management piece of it is, you know, my thought was at the time that if I'm going to charge more rent, I've got to have a nicer product for the person to live in, you know, thinking inside the unit.
Which makes sense, right?
Yeah, and so I started rehabbing the interiors of the units, but yet we weren't really getting any new renters. And so much less people that wanted to pay the higher price. And so, you know, like I said, I'd been to a meeting with you guys where we had met and talked to some other operators there and quickly learned that, you know, my first thing I should be doing is investing property or money into the exterior renovations to be able to drive more traffic. So, you know, it does a couple of things. It actually lets the people that currently live there know that you care, that you're willing to invest money into the property to give them a better community to live so they can go out and tell their friends and help you create community. But second of all, it helps erase the stigma from the neighborhood around you that, you know, you're taking this property and improving it, putting money into it. And all the people that drive by and see that every day know there's a change going on. So it attracts into the property where they can actually get there and go see the inside of the units that you've already done.
So. Absolutely. I wouldn't have known that either until I got involved with this group and other operators that, but it makes sense because you could almost picture driving down the road and driving down the road past, a property, multifamily property that just has not been touched in years. And you go by it and you're like, I would never, drive into that place and look to rent. But then all of a sudden, if you're driving by there one day and it's got a fresh coat of paint and they're putting up new fencing, then all of a sudden it triggers something in your head in terms of like, wow, they're investing money that place could turn out a lot nicer than I thought it ever could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We actually, I pro forma that at a certain level of rent and was actually almost able to double that.
Double what you thought you were going to get?
Yeah.
So explain, just give me an example, like a one bedroom or a two bedroom, either one. What was it when you came in? What was your pro forma? And then what is it now?
So whenever I came in, the one bedrooms were 365, I think it was 365, and then 425 for the two bedrooms. And so I was thinking, 485 for the two bedrooms and maybe, 395 to 405 for the one bedrooms.
So 365 to 405, you were thinking for the one bedroom. Okay. And what is it now?
So now the two bedrooms are 565 and one bedrooms are 515.
365 to 515. Yeah. And you thought you were only going to get to like 405. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's huge.
So it helps. It helps with that 20-year amortization. Being able to increase rents that much really helps cash flow. So when I refi it on a longer note, then it'll really boost the cash flow.
Absolutely. So there, on listening, there's probably a good large percentage of people that are interested in real estate or know real estate, but there's probably some people that don't know everything about real estate. And we just kind of threw around a term earlier, 1031. And, what all that is it's a tax law that allows you to take the gain in the property and roll it into another property that's either the same size or larger and not have to pay tax on that gain. So, would you mind if I asked you what you paid for that 16 unit?
Paid 1.4.
No, the 16 unit.
Oh, 16 unit, 450. Yeah.
450. You told me you sold it for 785. So you made 335,000. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? So 335,000. If you were to pay tax on that, you'd have a six-figure tax bill on that, most likely. And so you were able to take advantage of this tax law, 1031 exchange, and not pay tax on that. And so that allowed you to leverage into a larger property because you were able to take all of that gain and roll it in. So you went from a 16 unit to a 55 unit. That's a big jump.
Yeah, it is. And really did all that with very little additional money out of my pocket.
Because I mean,
31.
It's amazing. I have only gotten into real estate like 2.5 years ago. And when I talk to real estate investors and just hear the wealth building that has happened and how it compounds because it's so tax efficient, it's really incredible. So it's
amazing that you can create wealth out of thin air with real estate.
Right.
Just by buying a piece of paper, you can create equity.
Right. But what's one of the biggest challenges for people?
Taking action.
Yeah. Right. It's fear and taking action. And, the fear holds people back from taking the action. Some people will go through the process of getting educated, reading books, listening to podcasts, maybe even going to meetup groups. But actually pulling the trigger and look, I was one of them. Like I started my business in 2007 and that was scary. And I wanted to get into real estate a lot, you know, a lot sooner, but one, I was focusing on the business, and two, whenever I would look at real estate, it was just different for me. And like it, taking that first step, that first doing that first deal, was scary, but then you learn from it. Right. And then it's not as scary.
Right. Right. Oh, for sure. I mean, it's, you know, when I bought, even though I've been investing for, you know, years, but before when I bought that 55 unit on my own, man, my knees were knocking.
I'm sure they were.
Yeah.
I'm sure they were.
You know, you talk about taking action and, you know, one of the things that I like about what we do now as syndicators is, you know, people that do have a great W-2 job or they like what they do and they don't want to invest the time in, you know, going out and buying a property and managing a property and all the other things that we do, you know, by offering what we do as apartment syndicators, allowing people to have a fractional ownership in an apartment building and invest the money that they have earned through their W-2 or their retirement fund or whatever the case may be, and giving them a good return on that money, allows them to accomplish kind of the best of both.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that's one of the big whys in terms of why I even started this podcast. And one of the things I love about, you know, the real estate business and the syndication business, you know, my other business, all of the income and all the profit comes to me and my family. But you know, I syndicated a 76 unit deal and we had 44 limited partners. And the thing that gets me excited is, you know, as we increase the, you know, value of that property, I'm helping increase the wealth of those 44 families. Mm-hmm. And so that really charged me up and wanted me to get the word out to more people, because look, I've been around a lot of wealthy people and, in, you know, I'm 50 now, but when I was 48 is when I got involved in real estate. I didn't have one person offer me the opportunity to invest in one of these deals. And I was one of the guys that you talked about. I was making really good money. I was paying a lot in tax. Mm-hmm. And I would have loved to have, you know, taken some money instead of putting it in the stock market, put it into these deals, but I just didn't know about it, you know? So one, I was, you know, it's a kind of like a hidden world. And you know, once you're in it, like now I get so many, I'm sure you do too. You get so many different offers to invest in all these different deals. But until you get involved with, you know, with a lot of like-minded people, you don't even know that these opportunities exist.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has, you know, the opportunity typically to get in a 401k or some kind of mutual fund through their job and so forth. But like you just said, until I, even though I've been in real estate investing for all those years before I joined the mentorship group, I never even knew what a syndication was. So right. I never knew there was the ability to have the opportunity to invest, you know, to pool money together to buy a large apartment building. And so, you know, through your podcast and other content creation on social media channels and things like that, even a lot, getting people to know that this is even an option is great. So, and imagine the 44 families just on that first deal that you did, that just besides the money that you're going to make them, think about how you can affect their families and their kids for generations potentially by igniting that fire and you know, setting clicking on the light switch for them on what this can do for them and their kids and their grandkids even. So
absolutely. One of the investors, he's been doing it for a long time, and he's, you know, he's my deal is not the first deal he's invested in, but he's created an LLC and he's gotten his adult children to be members of that LLC, and he's exposed, you know, his children to it because he saw the power of it. And so I think it's just a, you know, an amazing vehicle. It's very tax efficient. Now, you mentioned a few times syndications and syndicators. A lot of us know what that is, but not everybody does. And I think it can be kind of intimidating, you know, that word, and without knowing. And you did kind of define it. It's just a group of people that come together to buy a larger asset than they could buy on their own, you know. And
exactly.
But it's an intimidating word if you don't know what it is. But
and depending on what crime shows you listen to, it could be a crime syndicate.
Yeah, right, exactly. The other thing that I didn't know, and a lot of people don't know, is that you can actually invest with your retirement money. Like, so you could actually, I didn't know that. Like, the bulk of people, the bulk of their investments are in retirement vehicles, whether they're IRAs or 401ks or whatever. And so when I passively invested in 7 deals. And when I went to invest, you know, I was given the option, hey, you can use retirement money. Or I was like, how do you do that? And they're like, well, if you have an IRA, you set up a self-directed IRA with, you know, there's certain companies that specialize in that, and you just transfer the money over there, and then that money gets used to go into the syndication. It really just opens up a whole nother world. And you know, I still have money in the stock market, but I'm so glad that I pulled a lot out to put into, you know, these hard assets that you could drive up to, and it also gives me the ability to talk to the people that are actually running the deals. I can't call up the CEO of IBM if I invest in IBM stock, right?
Right.
So now you do 16 unit, you do 55 unit, you're making a lot of money for you and your family, but now you join the group and you say, hey, I'm going to get into syndication. Mm-hmm. But you decide you're not going to do it on your own this time. And you, my understanding, you partnered with a couple of guys. How'd you meet your partners? How'd you guys decide to work together? And, you know, what kind of deals did you go after?
Right. So, you know, when we joined this group and we go to these networking events and so forth and have beers with great guys like yourself. And
oh, thank you.
And so, you know,
one of my favorite parts, by the way.
the reason you join a group like this is to get around people who are doing what you want to do and are where you want to be. And so we join this group and we meet these people and you also can form partnerships. And so I met a few different people that were operators and so forth and formed a couple different partnerships and had done some deals with a couple different partnership groups before I met my current partners, Carl and Rodney. You know, we had known each other socially through the group and we had talked about doing deals together. And then after I'd done a couple deals with other groups and they had done a couple deals with other groups, we were like, well, we need to do a deal together. So we kind of set that as our focus. And towards the end of 2018 and by early 2019, we had found an asset to purchase together.
Awesome. So you picked the two partners. What was your criteria for picking Carl and Rodney?
Well, A was to have a beer test.
The beer test.
you want like-minded individuals. You want guys that, you know, for me at least, it's important to be outwardly focused more than inwardly focused. And, you know, I believe we're all here for a higher purpose, which is to help other people more than ourselves. And these guys have the same mindset, you know. I mean, everybody likes to make money, but that's not the only thing we're in it for. And so being able to take a kind of an older rundown asset that and improve that for the people that live there and give them a better, you know, better style, better lifestyle is important. So, you know, that was a big part of it. You know, and like I said, they're just nice guys you like to hang out and have a beer with.
So you pick your partners. At the next step is you know, you have to decide, well, hey guys, where are we going to focus? What market are we going to go after? How'd you pick the market?
So I live in Springfield, Missouri. Rodney lives in Oklahoma City and Carl lives in DFW. So we kind of have a triangle around what we call the Mid-South, you know, Midwest and Southern states. And so we wanted to invest in these areas are great landlord friendly areas. That you can still get decent cap rates and that generates some good cash flow. And so we wanted to be able to invest in an area where we could, that had strong market fundamentals, but at the same time, we could drive there within a few hours if needed, because we're very active owners. And so we had found this asset in the Tulsa MSA. was the first one that we had bought together in a town called Pryor, Oklahoma. Mm. Now, a town of 10,000 people, probably 40 minutes east of Tulsa, a place I never would have imagined buying an apartment complex. But Google was there. So it has an interesting story. They came in about 2011 and invested probably close to $2 billion in that economy.
Are you kidding me? In the in that little 10,000 mm-hmm. population town?
So now they brought other, you know, there's a Mid-America Industrial Park, has about 80 companies there.
I saw that deal come across my email, but you got to be shouting that across the laptop to let me know that. I did not invest in that deal, and it sounds like I should have.
It's killing it. Awesome. Our pro forma was, you know, 12% cash on cash, and we're kicking that out. And, you know, we, just like everybody, we kind of pulled back during this COVID stuff to see how things were going to go. But we've increased occupancy and had record collections every month since. So we have made the decision to start reinitiating distributions, and we'll kick that out here next month.
Wow. That's awesome. Awesome. So good stuff. You know, you mentioned like-minded, you know, that like-minded, surrounding yourself with like-minded people. And, you know, when you're in our group and when you're, you know, looking at social media that we focus on and multifamily and whatnot, you see that type of stuff over and over again. And surround yourself with like-minded people, you know, da, 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 da. But it is so true. I mean, look, when you get around and you're in a room with all these people that, you know, that guy's done 3 deals, 5 deals, 6 deals. He owns 500 units, you know, 1,000 units, 2,000. Like, it all of a sudden makes it less scary because you have all this knowledge, all this education, and all this success, you know, surrounding you and cheering each other on. That's something that is something that I've been in a number of different industries, and I've never seen anything like this multifamily industry where people just help each other. And it probably goes from the standpoint that you really have to partner with people. But just one person after the other person helps the next guy. And I love that.
Yes, I agree. Completely an abundance mindset versus a scarcity mindset. And it's a team sport, like we always hear. And, you know, it really is. And so, you may be even competing against some of the guys that you know for the same deals, but at the end of the day, you still go have a beer and congratulate them.
After. During, I don't want to. I want to win. Yeah. But then after, regardless, win or lose, then let's go out for a beer.
Exactly.
So, hey, you didn't use this word, but I know you, I've heard you talk about it. And when you mentioned outwardly focused, it's pretty apparent. Talk about faith in your life, how faith impacts, you know, your day-to-day life and how you do business.
Well, faith is very important in my life, and it always has been. You know, I've always felt the presence of God with me throughout my whole life, even when, you know, I was at points in time where I was furthest away from Him. I always felt Him, you know, kind of His hands around me, pushing me back towards Him, or pulling me back towards Him rather. And so, you know, it's very important to me. I was raised in the church with my grandparents. You know, I was raised with a single mother. She wasn't really involved in the church, but my grandparents were. And so I spent every weekend with them, spent summers with them, you know, vacation Bible school and all that stuff. And so faith's always been an important part of my life. And whenever I got married and we had kids, you know, we were going to raise our kids in the church. And so we've done that. And, you know, throughout that process and as maturity, you know, you realize that it's more important to serve others than yourself, and you actually get more out of it. And so, mission work is a big part of what we do, and we've involved our kids in that.
Well, in what way? How do you do mission work?
Variety of different ways. I mean, you know, involved in little projects here and there with the food pantry. You know, we do a lot with the homeless community here in Springfield. We've done a couple of international mission trips, one to Ecuador, one to Brazil.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. But you know, it's like I said, it's really more rewarding actually doing the work than it is just writing a check. You know, a lot of people can write a check, but your time is the most valuable resource we have. And donating that along with a check makes it that much more impactful.
That's true. Now I'm feeling like accountability on me right now because I am a check writer. I believe in the big man upstairs. I try to start my day by reading, you know, book of the Bible every day and praying. And I, you know, go to a Christian church and tithe and I feel like you, like there's been a lot of, you know, there's, everybody has ups and downs in life and different crossroad decisions. And I've turned to God for, to help me, you know, and when we talk about fear, you know, help me push past the fear, you know, you don't know what's coming. He does. But I have tended to be the guy that, you know, that focuses on writing a check and not going out and doing as much as like you said, going to the food pantry. I feel like, serving is, you know, talking with other people and helping them motivate them to, you know, better their lives. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, in these syndications to try to improve the wealth of other people. I feel that that's where my service level comes in, but there, I still remember, I've been living in Dallas for over 10 years and I was a part of a church down and I was a deacon in a church down in South Florida. And I remember being a part of men's group there. And one weekend we all went and we went to an old church or something and we all painted for a day. And it was all the guys from the men's group. And I'm still part of a men's group on Monday mornings and now, but going out and doing that, I remember there was just a, you know, there was a camaraderie that was different than
just a different feeling, right?
Yeah. It was a different feeling. And, yeah. And I don't know why I don't take advantage of that more. And so I guess you're kind of putting the fire in me. It's kind of like, you know, people know that if they work out, they're going to have more energy and they're probably going to eat better, but they still will. You don't work out? Well, you should.
You're right.
So,
my wife's got enough for both of us. But you know, early on, I didn't have money, so all I had was my time to give. And so just kind of over time, you know, I implemented the other.
Think that's awesome.
Yeah, no, man, people serve in different ways, whether it's out swinging a hammer or whether it's ministering through conversations. So don't feel bad about not being out of swinging a hammer, man.
No, I get it. I'm not handy, man. I change the light bulbs in my house and that's about it. I've got golfing buddies that make fun of me all the time. So talk to me about some sacrifices you've had to make in your life to kind of better your life. You know, whether it's climbing the corporate ladder or whether it's trying to find another revenue stream, like getting into real estate, you know, whether it's your wife, you know, deciding to train for something or, you know, just become better fit. There's a sacrifice that takes place. What, talk to us about, you know, some sacrifice.
Well, probably the biggest, physical sacrifice has been sleep. You know, early on, especially as you're building your business and educating yourself, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was sacrifice family time. And so a lot of my education and learning and work I would put in, you know, would be after hours. And so I'd find myself up till 1-2 in the morning, getting up at 6 and, you know, doing it again.
That's an important point. And like we talked about earlier, you still have a W-2 job. So you're working during the day, you come home, you have dinner with the family, you know, talk about school, whatever, try to have some family time. Right. And then you have a choice at that point. Look, you could watch Netflix.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't really know any of the TV shows that are on anymore.
Right. You can watch Netflix. You can get in bed. You could do, you know, lounge out on the couch. You could watch, you know, sports if sports was on. There's no sports on. Well, actually, baseball just started again.
That's what it is, balance.
Yeah, but you choose to instead invest in yourself, read books, listen to podcasts, educate yourself. And then now you're in a different realm where you're actually partnering with two guys. I imagine that, you know, you're underwriting deals late at night, mm-hmm. or you're reviewing emails from your partners on how to handle certain situations or whether you want to pursue a deal. Right. So that's a sacrifice. So like, look, I think there's a lot of people that would like to get into multifamily. They can't just jump, you know, from their job. They're mm-hmm. like, how do you do it?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, luckily the job that I have does have some flexibility. I'm not tied to a cubicle from 8 to 5 or whatever. So if I'm not in the OR, you know, I may have a couple hours downtime. I can make some phone calls, things like that. Use vacation time to go do property tours, things like that. You just have to be very intentional with your time and schedule it out. And
that's a great word, intentional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so being able to prioritize the things that are important to you and be intentional about scheduling those things in a manner that's not going to interfere with you know, your primary objective of faith and family.
That's awesome. So you mentioned growing up, you grew up as a single mom. Mm-hmm. And so can I delve in to that a little bit? So your father wasn't around or?
No, never met my father, my biological father. I've never even seen a picture of him. I was about a year old and then they got divorced and that was it.
And that was it. So single mom, but you spent a lot of time with your grandparents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And so who would you say provided the male influence in your life? Was it your grandfather?
Grandfather, for sure. I spent every weekend over there pretty much because as a single mom, she wanted to be happy, you know, doing what single people do. But so I spent a lot of time with them. They're the reason that I have a foundation of faith and, taught me a lot of the lessons that a young man needs to be taught growing up. You know, I learned from my grandfather. So,
well, be thankful that you had that. You know, not everybody grows up with a single mom, has that, you know, great foundation and support. So are your grandparents still living?
No, they, my grandfather passed when I was 21. So 30 plus years ago. And grandmother was a few years after that. But yeah, my parents or my mom is still alive. She got remarried, to a guy, when I was about 21, 22, something like that. And he's a great guy, but he had a construction company and that's where I learned a lot of the stuff about, you know, how to swing a hammer and all that kind of stuff. So.
Gotcha. So. Growing up, you may have one of these moments, you may not, but growing up, was there ever a time when you thought to yourself, I'm going to be successful?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
What did that look like?
Growing up poor, you know, and I was in a school district where it was a brand new school, and lived in a neighborhood with, you know, tract homes, basically every third house is the same or whatever. So my mom had gotten remarried and they got divorced when I was in third grade and he wasn't really involved that much after that point either. So they did have this house, you know, that they had bought together in this tract home, this newer neighborhood, but it was, like I said, just a spec home, little old house. And then, but on the other side, of the school district were the big houses, you know, so
the other side of the train tracks.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I played sports with a lot of the kids that were in those families. I saw their intact families and the vacations they would go on, the houses they lived in, the cars their parents drove and the clothes they wore and all the nice stuff. And, you know, I always said to myself, I'm going to have that. I'm going to have a family that I'm going to get married one time in my life, and I'm going to have nice things and provide for them the things that I see my friends doing. And so I always knew, or I was always driven and had faith and commitment to be successful. But success, you know, the definition of success has changed over the years. Used to be about a dollar sign. Right. And now about a legacy.
How would you define legacy?
Having children that are outwardly focused, having, you know, I guess a legacy of being known as a giver, not a taker, and someone that loved their faith and family.
Wow, you're raising up your kids right. That's awesome.
You can provide them with the tools, hopefully, and whether they use them is up to them. But you know, hopefully, it's they're not angels by any means. But you know, just try to do the best you can.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. How old do you think you were when you started to visualize that, all that? Can you could actually, I'm sure you could picture it in your mind.
Fifth grade, probably.
Fifth grade. That's,
you know, that's like old. When I was in grade school, I mean, you know, I wanted to have that money that they would have just to go do the, you know, they would just be able to go to the mall and do stuff. And I go to the right. mall and, you know, eat the chips and salsa at the restaurant that was free.
Right, right. But, you know, that's what started your motivation. But as you mentioned, as you grew up and you matured and your faith grew, like your definition changed. And that's admirable. And the fact that you're passing that on to your kids is also admirable. You know, I try with my kids to instill the Christian faith, and but I'm probably guilty of more talking more about, hey, start your own company versus working for the man. Mm-hmm. And they're probably tired of hearing that, but they won't be able to tell me later in life that they didn't hear it. That's for sure.
A good role model for them. You've done it. They've seen the success that you've been able to do, telling them exactly what, you know, what you've done, and they've seen that what the results can be. So
yeah, I mean, they've seen both the good and the bad. I mean, you know, before starting this podcast, I was locked and loaded on like a 210 unit deal south of Dallas, and you know, I thought we were going to win the deal, and we came runner up, and it really was disappointing because we put a lot of work into it. You know how it is when you put a lot of work into a deal and you don't get it. And so they saw all the work I was putting in. They saw I didn't get it, and they saw I was disappointed. And then all of a sudden, you know, I took one or two days to kind of be bummed out. And then I shifted gears and went down to a podcast conference and learned how to get this thing started. So and now I get to talk to great people like you. So, hey, help listeners know, you know, if they want to get involved in a passive multifamily investment, how do they go about doing that?
Well, first of all, I would become educated because...
So what would you do to become educated?
Read books, listen to podcasts, learn how to underwrite. Learn how to underwrite and how to know how to ask the right questions, because anybody can make any deal look good, but you have to know what assumptions they're making to make that deal look good and if those are valid assumptions. So be an educated investor. Don't just invest with your buddy that you like. Know what you're investing in and why you're investing in it, what the upsides are, what the downsides are. But that can all be done through content. Free content for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much available these days, you know, from Google and podcasts and books and private Facebook groups and free webinars. And I would encourage people to get out and actually meet people. So, you know,
do that again.
What's it? Yeah. Once we're able to do that again, today I had a lunch with two other real estate guys, you know, there's some people that are willing to get out there and some people that aren't. So in any event, there's an app called Meetup, and there are free meetup groups. You know, you download the app, you put in either multifamily investing or apartment investing. And in most major metropolitan markets, you will find meetup groups that just focus in on multifamily. And you can go and meet with syndicators and you can go meet with other passive investors. So I would encourage you to do that. Mike, what do you do for fun outside of real estate?
Well, I played golf once this year.
Once? That's it?
Do it more often, but yeah, you know, between the day job, the family.
I play like once a week.
Yeah, that's nice. I'll be there one of these days. Once I can ditch the day job, then I'll have more
golf. Right. So what's the time frame on that? You know what? Somebody may be listening, so you who knows if you want to answer that one.
You know, the blessing and a curse about a good W-2 job is it's a great job, but replace it. So, I'm hoping within the next 48 months.
Awesome. So with that, what is the big stretch goal for Mike?
To retire in 18 months.
Retire in 18 months.
Corporate job.
Oh, from the corporate job. Okay. Will you still do real estate?
Always. Okay. I'll do real estate till I die.
That's interesting because I met with a life insurance guy a little while ago, and he was like, "Hey, Darren, let's back into this thing. You know, when do you want to retire?" And I was like, "You know what? Before this real estate thing, I would maybe have had a date, you know, but I'm like, I don't want to stop doing deals. You know, it's fun. I meet great people, make money. And, you know, improving properties, you know, I'm like, why would I want to stop this? I'm like, you know what? Put on the max thing. Like, I don't want to retire. Like,
you retire from something you don't like.
Right. And the other thing I like about real estate, which it wasn't always the case in the corporate world for me, was that there really is no ceiling. You know, in the corporate world, and you're in sales, you look at all the sales guys ahead of you and you're chasing them. And, you know, once you get to be, you know, where you're one of the top guys, it's hard to like continue to exponentially go up. Right. But in real estate, you could either always go bigger, you know, or there's all kinds of different asset classes. You know, you could learn multifamily, do 50 unit, then 100 unit, then 200 unit, then 500 unit, then 1,000 unit. And then you could decide, you know what? I want to do a shopping complex. Or I want to do an office building, or I want to do self-storage, or I want to do mobile home parks. There's so many avenues to go with it that I love that because I love learning at the same time trying to make money and trying to do something I haven't done yet. You know,
you're really only limited by what's between your ears.
Right. Mindset, right? I mean, you hear that term used a lot, but it's real.
Yeah. Well, and something else, you know, is that I love about real estate is the creativity, the way that you can structure deals, the types of deals you can do, you know, with financing, just all kinds of creativity you can put into real estate, not only in financing, but, you know, as you rehab these places. I mean, just, it's really cool. It's just, it's so much fun.
Sounds really weird to a lot of people because I heard that before too, before I got involved. Like, real estate is creative. Like, well, it doesn't, you know, you're just buying something. Like, what's creative about that?
But, like a toilet, that's all you do.
Right. But it's true. It's true. Like every property, a different owner could look at it differently, what they're gonna do to it. And I don't know if you've read Sam Zell's book. Am I being too subtle?
I haven't read it yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's a billionaire real estate guy, and he talks about that creativity and that he still loves doing deals because he looks at it like there needs to be an answer to every deal. There has to be a way to figure out how to make it work for all parties. And mm-hmm. he loves that puzzle of trying to figure that out.
That's the most fun part, I think.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know if I would say that. I say that I think the journey is more fun than the goal.
Yeah.
So like, you know, not knowing whether I could start a podcast, not knowing whether I could get my first syndication done, not knowing, you know, all those, that's where your juices are flowing. You know, mm-hmm. when you're just doing the same thing over and over and over again, it, you know, can, for a guy like me, it gets boring. I want a challenge, right?
Exactly.
So Mike, I'm going to wrap it up here, but I really appreciate you coming on the show. If people want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Feel free to reach out via email at mike@tridentmultifamily.com, mike@tridentmultifamily.com, or visit our website, tridentmultifamily.com. We're on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn. Follow us on there, or shoot, just give me a call, 417-576-8850.
Listeners, this guy is a great guy. I know both of his partners, they're great people as well. If you're looking for somebody to learn from, check these guys out. I hope you enjoyed that one. Until next week, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.